this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are searching for truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez, welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, inspecting the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes Mission, the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center in Glendale, and is brought to you by the good folks at the Apostles Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic, and dare we say, expanding universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Yes, talk about electronic universe. Did you catch that story about Obama being president and not being able to use his BlackBerry? Well, they finally gave him some dispensation. I guess he's on there. But you know what? It goes to show the world is changing, and we're happy to have you with us today in this changed world, in this constantly evolving world. It always goes to show us, you know, whether it's a BlackBerry or a Sevtut, you got to remember that these are all pointers that we can't do business as usual. Like, do you remember a few years ago when they told us it's not your father's Oldsmobile? Well, before we knew it, there was no such thing as an Oldsmobile. You can't find them today. No more new Oldsmobiles. And you know, before you know it, we might not have the same structure that we have today. In other words, things are constantly changing, and that's a good sign. You can't be scared of change. And that's what this podcast is all about. Because we come from a tradition that goes back pretty far. A lot of times it's easy to get stuck up in the past and not really let that glue off of your foot and take the next step into the future. Well, that's what we're trying to do over here with these Next Step podcasts. Taking a little bit of the old and looking at that incredible tradition that is founded by the Savior Jesus Christ and interpreted through the centuries as what we call Armenian ancient Orthodox theology, but not living back there, using that to interpret and look at our lives today, because we do have big lives, changing lives, evolving lives. So we welcome you here. I'm glad you could make it. And we do have a great show for you today. We got some messages, and of course we have the Global Perspective with Hadach Chilingirian out in London. We've got Bubbles coming to you from Ani Burr. And we are going to have a world premiere today. In fact, a group called Arax, and you will hear it first. One of their latest songs that is just being released on a CD called Crossings. So we'll introduce you that in a few minutes. But before that, let's get on with some of the things that are happening all around us. A lot of news in the world today. Well, that music always brings us to this point where we get excited about the news. And actually, there's a lot of stuff happening. Well, we started off with an electronic story about Obama and his BlackBerry, or we call it so affectionately the Sevtut. Yes, BlackBerry. Isn't that interesting how we make up these names to kind of like work out with our lives? And BlackBerries have become so part of our lives, as have all kinds of means of digital communications. And Pope Benedict XVI this week announced that the Vatican was going to have its own channel on YouTube. And wonderful! Yes, let's hear it for the Pope. Yes, absolutely. I mean, some 3 years after In His Shoes has its own channel. And of course, you know, I'm going to be touting that because we've paid our dues. We've done our work and we've been always on the electronic forefront, especially within such an ancient community as the Armenian Church. I'm very proud of that. Not proud that, hey, look at me, but we've been able to talk to another generation. I'm really excited that the Pope, too, is talking to his people and has made these opportunities, certainly through websites, through broadcasts. These are just means by which we approach people. And of course, it gives us a chance to say that, okay, we need to take the next step. It's not enough to say that, okay, today technology has evolved and we're using Blackberries or we're using YouTube, but what is the next step? How can we take one more step and keep bringing the gospel message in new forms, bringing that love of Christ to people, a love that is surpassed by all means and all types of understanding, and yet very accessible. Accessible to the newly born child as well as to the aged person. And we're going to be talking about Gertrude Baines in a few minutes, speaking about aged people. Yeah, I'll let you think about it for a moment. But of course, technology, the church, if you think about it, the church has always, always been on the forefront of technology. It is the church that became the reason, in other words, in the case of Armenian history, we see because the church had needs, technology evolved and there was the formation of the Armenian alphabet. In other words, there wouldn't be a culture had it not been for the needs of the church. Same thing when you think about the printing press. The printing press evolved because the church had its needs. It had to come out with a Bible. And same thing with art. I mean, look at all of the art forms that have taken place because of church. And when you think about some of the greatest singers and artisans that we have, musicians that we have, where does their life begin? It is always in a praise of God. Even last week, looking at Aretha Franklin, and you look at some of the big, big singers in American pop culture, they all have their roots in the church. So the church is been at the forefront of technology, but maybe unknowingly. And we have to, when we hear about the Pope making a statement like this, like having a special channel, a YouTube channel, you have to applaud that. And certainly when we talk about our own particular case, whatever church you do belong to, I come from an Armenian apostolic tradition. To me, it's important that those tools are tools that we can access in our lives and in our commitment to the gospel, in furthering the gospel. Now, obviously, there's the other side of the coin. There's the other side of the story, which we've all heard, and it's all too familiar. The idea of the church fighting science, fighting technology, of stifling progress. I mean, we've heard the stories. I wanted to present to you this small little snippet that yes, that because of the church, because of religion, let's say, we've had advances in technology. We've seen the printing press be created and evolve. We've seen systems of communication, of language that has evolved to a state where we have compressed the words of the Bible and placed them on a small chip or placed them on a computer disk or on a website. But the bigger stories are always there. How religion has stifled science, the progress of science, has not always been on communicating terms with science, whether it's the rejection of the universe, of the models of the universe, and believing that we do have a geocentric system, that we are the center of the universe, and the whole Galileo issues, as well as the witch hunts and the incredible pain that we still see today in this battle against evolution and Darwinism and really creating something that shouldn't be there. So I wanted to bring a balance to it because, again, Pope Benedict the 16th was in the news when he reinstated four bishops into the Catholic Church. Now, these four bishops had been excommunicated by the previous pope, John Paul II. And this pope, Benedict XVI, has revoked that excommunication. Interesting, huh? This is what happens when you get too legal, I guess. But what's interesting about it is this step backwards. This step backwards to revoke a decision of an earlier pope. And it's fascinating for Vatican observers as well as religious observers. For me, it was very fascinating. In fact, the way I got connected to it is because one of my heroes, one of the people that I look to in the Western Church, Hans Küng, and just a brilliant theologian who had been disciplined by John Paul II. In fact, he's so radical that he was disciplined by John Paul II. He came out and in a few statements recently against Benedict's actions to reinstate these bishops. In other words, these bishops who were looking for something back then and now to reinstate them. In Hans Küng's words, Pope Benedict XVI uses Vatican II just as a text to go backwards. That's pretty strong. Pretty strong language there. And he continues in an indictment. He says that the Pope has lost touch with his flock. And I think this is where we come to in this podcast, and the reason why I'm focusing on some of these issues today, because when we talk about change, it's very important that we all realize that as living entities, whether we're an individual, whether we are the head of a family or a member of a family, whether we're the head of a community or just a member of that community, we belong to living entities. And these living entities, bodies, organizations, communities are always changing. They are always in a state of flux, and they need to be. This is not something to fear. And in fact, if you look at your life right now, you find that in your life you have this opportunity to change. It is a beautiful opportunity. It is an opportunity that gives us hope. Because when you realize that you can change, you then start believing and dreaming in the tomorrows. And I bring these issues up today because we got to realize that some of the hardest things that we have in our lives is our conditions and our unwillingness to change. And this is where we need criticism. This is one of the beautiful things of dialogue, one of the beautiful things that we have with the internet, with technology today. It gives you and I opportunities to interact where we wouldn't be able to otherwise, but to interact with some of the biggest thinkers and models that we have in our lives today. Criticism is nothing that we should fear. Of course, I'm talking about respectful criticism, not to just go out there and say, oh, you stupid, you're an idiot or something, but to say that, hey, look, what you're talking about is out of whack with my universe. It defies logic. It's against common sense. I mean, it's okay to criticize so long as we engage in a dialogue. You think about some of the greatest teachers that you've had in your life. I'll tell you, in my life, they weren't people that just crammed stuff down my throat. They were people that engaged me in a dialogue, that allowed me to think, that allowed me to reason. And think about it in your life, whether in elementary school, high school, college, or outside of the classroom. The people that really mattered, that you remember today as teachers, are the ones that allowed you to be a person. I'll never forget one day I was walking where I had this incredible opportunity when I was a young man. There were few people that we really looked up to within the church, and one of them was Archbishop Diran Nersoyan. In my generation, he was a giant, and many times his name still reverberates among the church leadership today as a different thinker. And I had this incredible opportunity one day to spend some time with him, and I was a young seminarian studying, and I had studied some orthodoxy and had developed these ideas about mysticism. So there I was, ready to talk to him, and I'm going to share with him mystery. My thoughts on mystery and how comforting it was that we had mystery. And he looked at me and he laughed and he just said, "You can't be scared to use your brain." He says, "God has given you a brain and God has given you this ability to reason. Don't be scared to use it." Wow. There you go. You can't hide behind mystery. I'll never forget that simple message that he gave me, because it allows me today to really put things in perspective, really to find a middle ground, to find a meeting place between Occident and Orient, between West and East. And I think when we talk about Armenian Orthodoxy, when you look at this little landmass that Armenians have inhabited, yes, it is that middle ground between the East and the West. It is where Europe and Asia meet. And so too, our faith is not Orthodox with the big O. It is not Western Roman Catholic with the big C. It is that middle ground where we have been able to take the best of both worlds and put them together to find what we call here on this podcast Armenian Orthodoxy. Something which defines us in a very unique and novel manner. I'm ready for some spiritual bubbles. I need it right now. I need to get my mind wandering off.
This is your spiritual bubble. These saints were from Italy and contested for the faith about the year 126, during the reign of the Emperor Hadrian. Faith was 12 years old, hope 10, and love 9. Each was tormented and then beheaded, from the eldest to the youngest. Their mother Sophia mourned at their grave for 3 days, where she also fell asleep in peace. Because of her courageous endurance in the face of her daughter's sufferings, she is also counted a martyr. The name Sophia means wisdom in Greek. As for her daughter's names, Faith, Hope, and Love, they are Havatk, Huis, Ser in Armenian. We pray in the first tone. Since faith and hope and love were in truth sacred branches of Venerable Sophia, the namesake of wisdom, by grace, they have shown all men that Greek wisdom is foolishness. And in contest, they proved to be prize-winning victors, wherefore they received a crown that never shall perish from Christ God, the Lord of all. This is Ani from In His Shoes, with your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Well, thank you, Ani. That was very nice. Very appropriate, right? A little bit of wisdom, Sophia, and a little bit of faith, hope, and love. A little bit of reason along with mysticism. I mean, how appropriate is that? Well, thank you. And I hope you enjoy these spiritual bubbles. I do. It just lifts you up. Takes your mind to a different place, like watching those little bubbles go up to heaven. Some of them pop along the way, but some of them go beyond the horizon. And sometimes it's important to get your mind to go there too. So that's the intent of these bubbles, and I enjoy listening to them. Thank you, Ani. Well, you know, we're not done with the news yet, and I did tell you there was somebody special I wanted to talk about. Her name is Gertrude Baines, and this being the 33rd podcast, and you know how mystical that number is. Isn't that the Jesus number? Well, Jesus, they say, was 33 years old when he resurrected. He was crucified and resurrected. And the way they figure that is he was 30 years old when he got to the River Jordan, was baptized. And according to the Gospels, they could account for 3 Passovers. So there were 3 years that he celebrated his ministry on earth, and at age 33, he was crucified and, of course, 3 days later, resurrected. So 33 is forever known as the Jesus number, at least if not forever, at least I call it that. And Gertrude Baines is 114 years old. She has the unique distinction of being the oldest person on earth. And the reason? Well, because 115-year-old Maria de Jesus passed away at the age of 115 in Portugal. So now Gertrude Baines is the oldest person on record. And what caught my attention was that there was an incredible spread about her. She said that she is tired of the fuss over her. And she's tired of the fuss created by this new title that she's inherited, so to speak. She said in a quote in the article, it said, "I just want to go to bed and pull the covers over my head." She was born April 6th, 1894. And at the age of 114 years old, she now has the audacity to stand up to the reporters who all crowd around her for interviews and just tell them off. And I think this is really nice. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because of an event that's taken place that everyone's going to know. Actually, it has one of the biggest viewership on TV. It's called the Super Bowl. It takes place this Sunday, and we have the Steelers playing the Cardinals, and big hoopla, billions and billions of dollars are going to be spent this Sunday as people watch this game and figure out who the champion football team is. And of course, most of the world doesn't even know about it because they call soccer football what we call in America soccer. And so there's a confusion there, but anyway, you get the idea. It's a big event. And of course, a few days earlier, I heard about the Oscar nominations, about the Academy Awards, and all the hoopla with these people that are making these 6, 7, 8 figure incomes off of movies that entertain people. And at the same time, we're talking about people going hungry, we're talking about people having difficulty in their lives because of financial crises. And you have to wonder, how do you put all this together? In fact, just the other day I was thinking about, in November they had the Armenia Fund, which collected something like $35 million to help out Armenia. When you think about it, what is $35 million? Well, it's a lot of money. I mean, I don't want to fool you. I could use it. I'll take it any time. But that's exactly the point. I mean, you're putting together a country. You're not putting together a life. You're putting together a country. $35 million, isn't that like a few houses and the driveways between them? I mean, the other day, the Taco Bell Chihuahua. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. That little chihuahua. The people that came up with the idea sued and won Taco Bell, and the settlement was $42 million. And again, I repeat, there are people in the world that are hungry. We're talking about a financial situation right now that is costing people their lives. Just a couple days ago, we heard about in Los Angeles a father that shot 5 of his children and his wife and himself, all because they had been laid off from their position in a hospital, in a local hospital. And he just was completely hopeless and didn't know what to do and wrote a letter to that effect and then took his life and his family's life. We're talking about money being spent, and not just money. We're talking in the tune of millions of dollars to drag a football from one side of the field to the other side of the field. We're talking about millions being spent for 1 or 2 minutes of commercial time to sell you a bottle of beer, a type of alcohol, some cosmetics, some kind of product that you probably don't even need. And yet, on the other hand, we know the struggles of the new class of poor. People like you and me that are dealing with the financial uncertainties of the day. mortgages, collapsing economies, healthcare prices, education costs, and a general uncertainty of where we're headed as a people, as a country, as a world today. And I bring all this up because, like Gertrude Baines, who has every reason to celebrate and should certainly be somebody who must be noted, like Gertrude Baines, we can take the higher road and say, so what? You know what? Here's the guarantee this week. This week, the Super Bowl game will take place, and I'll guarantee you, either the Steelers are going to win or the Cardinals are going to win. That's it. I mean, it doesn't go any farther than that. And so here's the guarantee Gertrude Baines has. She's the oldest woman in the world, and here's the guarantee: she always will be. And when she closes her eyes for the last time, God give her a long life, but when she closes her eyes for the last time, somebody else may pass her up, but so what? She will never know. And so she will always be, in her head, the oldest person in the world. And we need to have that kind of confidence in our lives, in ourselves, that kind of self-worth, because there is a superlative added to our life. We are the best because God cared enough for us. God loved us enough. So automatically, as children of God, we are the best. And we need to stop worrying about things that really, in the long run, don't matter. Who wins an Academy Award? Who wins the game? Who's the oldest? I mean, in the end, you know, you close your eyes, and what's important is your reconciliation with God, with the creator of the universe. Every April, I get this unique chance to go and talk to kids in high schools. Believe it or not, American high schools allow me as a clergyman to go in there because we hide under this guise of the genocide. But I always make a point of bringing a spiritual message. I'll talk more about the details of it later, but I do want to make this point that last year it dawned on me that if I had one message to give our youth today, it would be to stop taking drugs. And whenever I tell them that, they automatically, their ears perk up, and they're ready to hear the priest talk to them about not taking narcotics and not using dope and so on. And I tell them what the real drug is. The drug is all of this garbage that we're being fed to keep us away from reality. Does it really matter who Paris Hilton hangs out with? Does it really matter what Kim Kardashian's doing today? I mean, think about it. Those are all drugs. Those are the narcotics that we're being fed to keep us in this oblivious state, to not confront the real challenges of the day. In fact, it was one of the reasons why we invited this very special segment to our podcast last week. And I'm glad it received some great reviews from you, the listeners. Of course, I'm talking about the global perspective. Let's get a broader perspective of what we're about, who we're about, how we function in the big world. Yeah, there's fun things in the world, and you should have fun. It should matter to you, like, who's going to play a game or who's going to win an Academy Award, but it shouldn't matter to the point and the exclusion of the real, true values that are yours. And those values God has placed in your heart, that ability to love, to reach out and care for others. The global perspective. We started off last week. Here's our second installment of it.
This is Hraj in London, and welcome to this week's Global Perspective. The inauguration of President Barack Obama last week brought a sense of hope not only in the United States, but throughout the world. Among the most critical issues that President Obama and governments of virtually every country in the world have to deal with is the continuing global financial meltdown. Today is the opening day of the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland. As we speak, this is one of the most important yearly gatherings that brings together CEOs and business leaders of the world's 1,000 foremost companies, over 40 heads of states, and hundreds of experts to discuss the state of the world. This year, the forum, which was established in 1971, will focus on the managing of the current global financial crisis and how to shape the entire post-crisis agenda. Issues from economic reform to climate change and basic healthcare and other relevant issues. So today, let's take a closer look at the global financial crisis that started last year and the dire effects of which will be felt this year and in the next few years. 2008 was an unprecedented year globally. The declining house prices in the US triggered financial disruptions and turned into global credit crisis of systemic proportions. By the summer of 2008, most advanced economies around the world entered the recession and emerging markets started to feel the effects. There are two underlying factors that makes this financial crisis different from previous ones. First, it showed just how tightly interconnected globalization has made the world and its systems. And second, how the problem was caused by developed economies using unprecedented levels of debt and leverage throughout the financial system. And as we know, by the end of last year, most advanced economies in the world were all in recession for the first time since World War II. This reduced the prospects for growth in emerging markets as there was lower demand for export goods. The outlook of most economists and experts for 2009 is very grim, as we all know. Markets remain volatile, there is still no liquidity, unemployment is rising around the globe, and consumer and business confidence has fallen to record lows. In fact, global economic growth is expected to be below potential in 2009 and 2010. In such an uncertain environment, the range of global risks, which are by nature so interconnected, are quite wide. From the much talked about further drop in China's growth, an important country in world economic terms, to deteriorating financial markets, to further asset price falls, to the inability of many governments and institutions to mitigate global risks. Indeed, the long-term consequences of the decisions that are being made today are yet unknown, the list of which are the rescue packages that are being handed out by governments and financial institutions. Of course, the speed at which these events unfolded was unprecedented and caught many governments and financial organizations by the geopolitical and economic context of the last two decades against which the recent financial crisis unfolded is indeed very instructive. After the end of the Soviet Union and communism, globalization, the integration of economic, political, and cultural systems the globe over, and the political economy of transition of former Soviet countries became hot topics in regional and international relations. While the strong economic growth as a result of globalization had improved the lives of people around the world in absolute terms, the process of globalization, especially technological changes, had often been blamed for the widening gap between rich and poor. As a result of the world economic system, shaped by a global capitalist market, or what some called in the West the New World Order, there was growing social polarization around the world. For instance, only a few years ago, the wealth of the 475 billionaires in the world was equivalent to the combined incomes of more than 50% of the world's population. That's about 3 billion people. Another staggering example of inequalities in wealth distribution was the fact that the assets of the three richest people in the world exceeded the combined GDP of nearly 50 least developed countries. The central theme that keeps coming back over and over again is greed. Not only among rich bankers and private financial institutions, but individual investors as well. Interestingly, The Economist magazine last week titled its special report on the future of finance as Greed and Fear. Greed, as we know, is considered one of the seven deadly sins in the Armenian Church and generally in Christianity. Of course, the reference is not necessarily to physical death, but more significantly to spiritual death. Let us think for a moment, why is greed deadly? If our capitalist system encourages amassment of wealth, and society generally views financial success as a good measure of success in life, why then greed is deadly? This is one of the most fundamental moral questions that we need to struggle with and discern. So while you have a chance to think about these questions, I will stop here because next week we will come back to this important and timely question. In fact, the financial crises we are facing collectively and individually are multi-layered and pose many moral and ethical questions. So we will continue our discussion. Until then, this is Hraç Çilingirian with the Global Perspective.
How could he do that to us? Leave us hanging like that. I'll be here next week. I hope you'll be here. I gotta hear. Those teasers always get to me. But you know what? With Hraç, you almost have to take small bits at a time. You can't take too much at one time. So it's best to spread it out over a few weeks. So he will continue the Global Perspective every week with us. And we're very lucky to have someone like Hraç producing these small little snippets of information that connect us to such a vast global community. God is a concept by which we measure. Oh. Well, the final bit of news that I wanted to cover today was this little clip that appeared in the Los Angeles Times, and interestingly enough, it happened to be the question of the week for us. As you know, in Glendale, California, the news press, a little small satellite of the Los Angeles Times, does a little piece with different pastors asking them a question of the week. And I have the good fortune of being able to bring the Armenian perspective there. So, and I wanted to share this with you because it did hit the general news. The Los Angeles Times recently ran a story about an atheist campaign in Britain in which a group has placed banners on public buses reading, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." I like that. The campaign apparently has proven popular in mostly secular Britain, the article says. And now they're asking us, and they're asking me, as a priest of the Armenian Church, in my line of spiritual work, do you often deal with atheists and non-believers, and how do you go about reconciling their beliefs with your own? And I thought I'd take this opportunity to share my response with you, the listeners, because we do publish this, of course, on our website, and locally it does appear in the paper. But I did want to share this answer because it is one that I've thought about many times, about our obligation to evangelize, or how could you reconcile evangelization in such a secularized society. And I also wanted to share it with you because we get a chance to talk about something that was on the news recently, and here is a response. So I wrote as follows. We may never know if the old adage, "There are no atheists in foxholes," is true. But I do know that when my first son was born, and I watched that miracle with watery eyes, without a doubt, there are no atheists in birthing rooms. That moment allows us to ponder some of the deepest thoughts of life, purpose, and things eternal. Everyone believes in something. When an atheist tells me he or she doesn't believe in God, they're only stating a disbelief in a particular concept. And, usually after a brief encounter, we find out that I reject the same. For the most part, their disbelief is in a Superman type of God, one who swoops down from the heavens, fixes things, rewards the do-gooders, and punishes the bad guys. It is a disbelief in a power that designates rules that profit some and bring pain and suffering to another segment of the population. It is a disbelief in a conscience that allows genocide, famine, and abuse of children. Like I said, I don't even believe in that concept of God. An Armenian Orthodox understanding of God begins with the simple equation that God is love. As such, when we see manifestations of love in our lives, we find the presence of God. It is timeless, dating back to the earliest moments of history, and never dying, that is, it lasts forever. It's hard to deny love because it is present in the smile of a child, in the visitor to the cancer ward, in the rescuer at the hurricane site, and in the hand that reaches out to hug you in your times of loneliness. Accordingly, my argument to the atheist is not with words, but by living the life that exemplifies that love. That is, by reaching out to others, helping the needy, visiting the sick, and loving all without prejudice, I make a small but important case for God. That's it. I mean, sometime in my life I realized that, you know, you really can't argue it out. You really got to live it out. I got a nice response from a gentleman named Joe. He writes, I'm reminded of a quote from Mother Teresa. Preach the gospel always. If necessary, use words. Thanks, Joe. That's perfect. I had to use 20,000 words. She said it so beautifully and so eloquently in one simple sentence. Preach the gospel always. And if necessary, use words. Well, I brought you to the end of the podcast, and I did promise you a brand new song. And to fulfill my promise, here it is. Not only is it brand new for us, the listeners of The Next Step, it is brand new for the entire world. And we have the unique opportunity and pleasure to present it for the first time ever. It is by a group called Arax from their latest CD called Crossing. And this CD will be available very shortly. And in all finer stores everywhere. And we're going to be listening to a song called Vaspuragan. And the reason we picked out this song? Well, to tell you the truth, it's just a lot of fun. Vaspuragan from Arax, their latest CD, Crossing. Wow! I hope you're up and dancing, because if you're not, if you're driving a car, I hope you're still in your place. But everybody else, wow, how could you resist that? That was incredible. That was a group called Arax, and they played a song called Vasburagan. It is off their latest CD called Crossing, and that CD will be available at all finer music stores everywhere, or wherever you do your music purchases. You want to check them out, and I gotta tell you, just about every song on that album is just as good as that one. I mean, it is an album that will make your head turn, and definitely will make your feet move. That was beautiful. That brings us to the end of this podcast, and it has been a pleasure putting it together. Hope you've enjoyed being with us today. I want to take this opportunity to thank everybody who's written in and sent in their comments and opinions, and I want to tell you that we're in our new studios right now. Actually, it's the same building, but we are now sharing it with Yerevan Nights, and we invite you to check out yerevannights.com. Especially, you want to check them out at 10 o'clock in the morning. Well, that's Pacific time. And I got a really nice email from a lady named Lena, and she made a mention. She's in Lyon, France. And she said, your podcast doesn't come out to us until Thursday. And you know what, Lena? You're absolutely right. I am so California-centric that I believe that time begins and ends here in California, and I'm glad you brought that to my attention. I need to be a little bit more global too, don't I? So, actually, it is Thursday morning that these podcasts come out, and Greenwich Mean Times for the Yerevan Nights with Gor Mkhitaryan would be 6 o'clock, or 1800 hours, let's say. Oh, man, do you guys have a lot of different systems? When are you going to get on standard, or is it always going to be metric? Okay, enough continent bashing, right? Anyway, I want to just let you know that Yerevan Nights, great program with Gor Mkhitaryan. We're so glad of our friendship and our mutual work together, because I know it's taking us to places that we're just dreaming about right now. Got a great group of people coming in from Armenia, and a great group of broadcasts that are being shared here and there. So we look forward to a great partnership between these two groups. InHisShoes.org, that's where life begins. Check it out. The website has been revamped, and a lot of great, cool information for you about what we're up to and what we're doing. That's InHisShoes.org. And of course, check out our website, epostle.net, for this podcast as well as every other podcast we've done. So for all the good people who make this a possibility, for Susie, our producer, for Hrach out in London, for Ani with all her bubbles, and for Ken, who even in this new environment finds ways of sneering at me, this is Father Voskin welcoming you back again next week, when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.